Good afternoon. This is Kathleen McCoy. I'm your host of Hometown Alaska this afternoon. We're doing a show on the Chugach National Forest because it's updating its forest plan. And if you're not sure where the Chugach National Forest is, we're here to tell you. We've got some great experts on the show today to share their planning process with you. It's really a great day to call in if you've got questions. I want to welcome my guests to the show. We have Sarah Borio, Public Affairs and Partnerships with the Chugach National Forest.
Good afternoon.
Don Reese is a Forest Plan Division Team Leader. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing?
And of course, we know you're here because you're an expert on the Forest Plan.
Absolutely.
And then we have Terry Marcerone, who's the Forest Supervisor, which sounds like the mom of the whole forest or something like that.
I am the manager of the forest.
Right, which is a big job. So we also want you to know that we've got on our website, alaskapublic.org, some great links from the Chugach National Forest. And I've spent a lot of time on their website. There's tons of information that's really valuable and useful. It can be a little overwhelming, which is why this is a great opportunity to have some of the speakers just come and share their information with us. So if you're really not sure what the Chugach National Forest is, I just want to remind you that if you've ever hiked the Resurrection Trail, you're in Chugach National Forest. If you've kayaked or camped in Prince William Sound, you're in Chugach National Forest.
You're
right?
Surrounded by it.
So the water is not your territory,
yeah.
But the shorelines. If you fish on the Kenai, you're in Chugach National Forest. If you watch birds in Cordova?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So all those things we Alaskans actually really love to do. You may not know it, but you're doing it in the Chugach National Forest. I wanted to invite our guests to first, you know, explain Chugach State Park, which I think a lot of people think they're in when they're doing some of this, versus Chugach National Forest. Who of my experts wants to leap at that?
Well, I'll kick it off. If you're looking out your window in Anchorage, if you have a great view to the east, that front range, those mountains, you're looking at the state park. We would love to claim it because they're a wonderful recreational resource for the local residents here and visitors. But we start on the other side, so just about around Girdwood is where the Chugach National Forest starts. And we do connect to the state park. We curve around Prince William Sound. Those mountains curve around Prince William Sound all the way over to Cordova and the Copper River Delta, down the Seward Highway to the eastern Kenai Peninsula. We're about 5.4 million acres, so we're a little bigger than the state park, too. I think that's...
Probably a lot bigger, right?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Basically, it's a gem. I mean, you have to say it's a gem. I was looking up to see how did it become a national park, and it's like Teddy Roosevelt in 1907. Does that sound right to
national,
you?
National Forest.
Yeah. I mean, did I say state park?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, both the Chugach and the Tongass, actually, in 1907 by Teddy Roosevelt. And at one point, actually, the Chugach National Forest did encompass Anchorage proper. So Anchorage, to a certain extent, was carved out of this forest. So we really think of Anchorage as a true gateway community to the Chugach National Forest. And in about the 19-teens, when the railroad was starting to be developed, is when a lot of that was turned back over and relinquished. So we're moving back into our boundaries where we are today.
And I think it's about 6 or 7 billion square miles, something like that.
5.4 million acres. I don't know what that turns into in square miles.
It is the second largest forest in the country behind the Tongass, which is the second national forest in Alaska.
Yeah. Right. It's truly a gem. I mean, I think people may not realize, and I don't know why they don't realize they're in a national forest as opposed to a park. But
another thing that's just really distinct about it, and one of the ways we talk about the Chugach a lot, is that there are actually communities embedded in the forest, like Cordova, like Moose Pass, like Seward, and as I just mentioned before, Anchorage being carved out. And so this is a place where people actually really live. It's where they work. Certainly, we have nearly 150 outfitter guides, for example, that are essentially small mom-and-pop businesses that make their, you know, livelihoods off of serving people on the National Forest, bringing visitors out. And it's where people play. You know, we play. Lots of people watching the birds, whatnot. So it's a really extraordinary place and means a lot to Alaskans and especially people around South Central.
Right, right. I mean, anybody who's ever used a public service forest cabin, which I have a million times, I mean, it's just so wonderful. It's so easy to get out there. So, but there is some change, although we don't know how big a change it is. The forest plan is being redone. So Don, why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is and why the National Forest is doing that?
Okay, very good. We're in the process of revising a forest plan that is in existence. We have a plan from the early 2000s that's in place, and so what we're looking for is to hear from the public and other agencies, municipalities, et cetera, what is working with our current existing plan and what is not.
Let me break in and give a phone number. So if people want to tell you right now what they think or what they're worried about, they've got the number. You can call in right now and talk to Don at 550-8433, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. If you're outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. So really, this show is a great opportunity for if people have just heard about the forest plan and there's something. In fact, I really love the four questions that you ask. How do you use the forest?
Right.
What are the issues and trends that you think are important? So those are the kind of questions. If people have that in mind, we'd love to hear from you today. So, but tell us a little bit more, Don, about this forest plan.
Yeah. So nationally, we're one of eight forests that are revising under the new planning rule. And so what that means is the 2012 planning rule has certain requirements. There's three phases to it. And so we're just at the beginning phase, and it's the assessment stage phase, which is not a decision. We're taking a snapshot of existing conditions, and there's requirements that we have to describe and talk about, like terrestrial conditions, aquatic conditions, et cetera, fish and wildlife. But also the social and economic side that we need to describe. What is the Chugach National Forest and where does it fit in? But it's a snapshot in time, and that's what the assessment is. There's actually 15 categories that we are required to address.
Right. So basically, the Chugach National Forest has had a plan in place, and it gets updated and revised, and there's a big public process when that happens. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the new planning rule is different. Again, it's a three-phase process. We're in the assessment stage, and then we'll roll into, in this next year, in 2014, we'll roll into actually revising the forest plan and doing an environmental impact statement and getting public comment at that stage that'll be actually documented. At the stage that we're in, though, we are trying to get a sense from the public of how they use the forest, what are some of the barriers, what's working with the plan, and what's not working with the plan.
And they probably are unaware that there's a plan. I mean, some people will know if you're engaged with the National Forest Service in some, you know, maybe a concession or something, you would know. But the average user may not know. I know you just finished a series of assessment meetings all around. Can you tell us a little bit about what you heard? And these were just information gathering. How do you use the forest?
Well, one of the things, I'm going to defer to Terry here because she is the forest supervisor. It's going to be her name on the assessment report, even though it's a non-decisional document. And also, she's going to be the one that is going to sign the new plan. So I defer to Terry at this point.
Hi, Terry.
Hello.
Come on in. So can you tell me a little bit about what you heard at these various hearings? I saw they were in Seward. They were all over the place, about 14 of them or so.
We had nine public meetings all over the area that encompasses the Chugach National Forest. And what we heard is while people may not know every line that's in the forest plan, they definitely use the forest. And that's really what we're looking for. The plan is a strategic a document that guides our day-to-day forest management. So the kind of feedback we heard was things about access, things that people wanted to see more of in terms of recreational activities. As you indicated earlier, people love cabins, they love to fish, they love the opportunity for hunting. So there were comments that related to making sure that we continue to provide habitat and recreational resources to do those kind of activities. We also learned a lot because tribes and Alaska Native corporations are very important in our area because of subsistence and the fact that these lands were inhabited way before any of us. And so we've also learned about some of the spiritual and the cultural significance from many generations ago to the present, as well as more currently historical activities such as mining. So we've had a lot of individuals that like to recreate for gold and have claims on the National Forest, which is definitely a legal and encouraged use of the land. So we kind of had a diversity of both youth, folks that are out there, as Sarah indicated, recreating, as well as those making part of their living from the resources that are on the forest. So we heard from all aspects of those individuals over these 9 meetings.
You know, I saw something on the website that said, like, generally, like, 95% happiness rating. I mean, people really, it's hard to find anything to complain about of the Chugach National Forest. At least that was the gist of what I was reading, you know, just kind of really loving it. And is there any danger of people loving it to death?
Well, I think that, I mean, one of the things, so the thing you saw on the website, Kathleen, is the first snapshot our staff have looked at of existing information. So that was like recreational survey information. And it's saying, there 95% of survey respondents have enjoyed their experience on the Chugach National Forest. One of the things we do with some of that preliminary information is take it out to these public meetings and talk with the public about, you know, this is what we're seeing in some of our information. What are we missing? What are the gaps? Does this ring true? And in certain, you know, situations, and also I think some of the information showed that use seems like it's pretty steady. It's not necessarily spiking or declining. When you go out and talk with folks in the meetings, though, then you really get a sense of some of the nuances. Well, maybe it's steady across, but in these particular areas, maybe motorized use is really increasing in this one spot, and kayaking is declining over here. Mm-hmm. And you really start to get kind of a little more nuance behind those numbers, which has really been one of the valuable experiences of engaging the public early in the process. And that is something that is very, I think, is distinct about the new rule, is that we're engaging the public and our neighboring landowners and the tribes and the corporations across all 3 phases of plan revision. And I believe that's a new aspect of forest planning.
Well, what's really new about it is that normally when we engage with the public, we bring them a proposed project and ask them to comment on it. In this case, we're not coming in with any preconceived notions. We come in with the plan that we have now, but we're
existing.
We're asking people to dialogue with us. You know, again, as Don indicated, how's it working? What would you change? What do you think's going to be the needs in 15 years? Mm-hmm. And again, as I shared earlier, they definitely understand and use the forest enough to know whether it's, you know, keep the hunting, the fishing, but also provide maybe more motorized access or an additional road. Personal use firewood becomes very important in these times when heating costs are higher for oil.
Sure.
So people want to know they can go out and gather firewood and be able to use that for home.
Right, right. And Don, I think you told me, or I read it on the website, that this process is like an every 15-year update. I mean, it's ongoing. Nothing has really driven a change here. It's more or less time to update the plan.
Correct. Yeah. Nationally, we are to revise our plan every 15 years. One of the key things about the new planning rule is that it has the intent to be more streamlined and more efficient and to complete a forest plan in a 3-year time frame, where in the past, other forest plans have taken 5 to 7 years. So it's with intent there to streamline the process, to be more effective and efficient, and not to go to the public with a proposed alternative at the start, but to listen, to hear what they have to say that is working with the plan and what is not working with the plan.
And that's a new approach.
It is a new approach.
That's cool. Everybody, this is your chance to get in, you know, get in on the ground floor. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the Chugach National Forest, which is updating its forest plan. And our guests today are Sarah Borio. Hi, Sarah, again.
Hi.
Terry Marcerone, who's the supervisor of this forest.
Hello.
Hi, Terry. And again, Don Rees, who's one of the team leaders of the new forest plan update.
And Kathleen, one of the things you just mentioned that I just want to really emphasize again is that because it only happens every 15 years, this really is a unique opportunity for people to get involved. If, you know, people are weighing, like, there's so many planning processes going on around you, right? You hear that word all the time. Someone's developing a plan for something. This is once every 15 years. So we really want folks to get involved. It's a unique opportunity. Join us. Call in.
Yeah, call in. And again, I'm going to throw the number out there for you folks. It's 550-8433, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Now, as a consumer of the forest and a user of the forest, I think my immediate question is, well, what's going to change? I mean, I know you're not there yet, but are you hearing things that you think will suggest change? And can we talk about those a little bit loosely? I mean, I know the plan is not in place, but maybe there's things you're hearing. You alluded to a few, Terry, I think.
Again, I think some of the common themes we heard was access, winter access, summer access, the type of vehicles or transportation. Some people would like to see more motorized access. Some people would like to see less.
Mm-hmm.
Heliskiing, you know, the use of aircraft that lands on the forest, the noise. For some people, they want solitude. and some they don't. So that's a couple.
We need to give her a break for coffee. Have a glass of water. It suggests that there might be conflict, and of course, conflict is always interesting. I mean, it's what you probably have to deal with. How do you make everybody happy? And Donna, I mean, do you think about that as you move down the process, the planning process?
Oh yeah, yeah. And one of the key things when we went out to the public for these different pre-meetings is that people were thinking that we were going to come with an alternative, and there was a lot of body language with folded arms. And
here come the feds.
It was great because the word had gotten out that we were going to do something with the forest, and they didn't like it. So they came in with thinking that we were going to shut things down. And on the contrary, when we said we don't even have a proposal or an alternative to present, but we're glad you're here because we want to hear what you have to say about how you use the forest and what do you think some of the barriers to use on the forest are. It was great. It was just like a light bulb went on.
Mm-hmm.
And so my takeaway was that the process is different. It's way different with the new planning rule, the 2012 planning rule. It's listening to the public. And other agencies and tribes and tribal corporations and so on, and trying to engage others who have not typically been involved with forest planning before,
mm-hmm.
like youth and low income. And it's just it's a different way of doing business. So,
yeah. Well, I'm curious about why the agency changed. What did it recognize or realize? That why did it change its process and really try to go in without a plan and just listen first?
Well, I mean, I think to a certain extent, I think it's about being able to more effectively collaborate with the public and reduce conflict. I think the more you engage people on the front end of listening and helping to define the need for change essentially together, and to a certain extent, obviously recognizing that it's still the forest supervisor's decision, but it reduces that conflict on the back end because you're matching expectations and building a common base of information from the beginning before you even see those proposals on the table. So I think that's huge from my perspective, someone who's been involved in planning efforts in the past outside of the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the other point to bring up there too, and Chugach does a good job of engaging partners in projects in both designing and implementing. And we've done that in a lot of areas. You look at our Spencer Whistle Stop and our relationship with the Alaska Railroad. You look at our Chugach Children's Forest and the way we've worked with Alaska Geographic and 30 other nonprofit partners in the community to engage youth to literally doing projects, service projects, as well as discovering and doing research on the national forest. And so I do think that part of the new role reflects the ability that this is your national forest,
mm-hmm.
and you have some ownership, and by owning it and being engaged in projects and programs, that's part of what the role is asking people to engage in early. What are those kinds of projects and programs that are important to you?
Let's talk just a little bit about a timeline, because we've suggested that maybe some people are saying we want more motorized access. Some people are saying we want quieter. So we're not like on the brink of a decision here. So let's talk a little bit about the timeline that people can expect. I think you said a 3-year process, but so the kind of conversation we're having today isn't really going to suggest the kind of changes we will likely see, right?
So let me kick that off with the current phase we're in, the assessment phase again, is a gathering of information, social, economic, and resources. We're doing that over the next few months, and that's what the 9 previous meetings we're gathering information on. We'll continue to collect that over the next month, again, dialoguing with tribes, Alaska Native corporations, youth, and others to holistically gather all of their input.
Mm-hmm.
We'll share that back with them in a couple months, through meetings and through websites and through other types of programs where we can share the information. From there, what will occur is we'll go into what's called a need for change based on that feedback. What are some of the things that could change in our plan based on where the public and where our agency is heading for the next 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
From that need for change, we'll go into what's formalized as a revision, which is our environmental impact statement, which will have a proposed action,
mm-hmm.
continue that process and integrate in our monitoring component. You know, how are we going to actually monitor what we say we want to do and need to do?
Mm-hmm.
And that whole process is the 3-year process, of which all of that encompasses public involvement and engagement throughout all of those stages.
Right. So the best thing people can do is watch your website, probably. In other words, we don't yet have another list of public, you know, meetings on the website yet. We just finished a series of nine to take, gather information. So the best thing they can do is check in with the Chugach National Forest website to just kind of monitor the progress. And I know there's lots of information about, you know, forest rule 2012, and then you read a little bit, pretty soon you're reading about 2000, and then you're reading about 1982. So there's lots of information on the website. So
there's lots of information on the website, and it's been recently updated, and we add information often. And so we are trying to point folks in that direction as far as getting on the web, taking a look at it. And I was really impressed with when we went out to the communities, a lot of people are looking to the web. Some of them check it weekly. Some of them might even check it daily to see what's happening.
Yeah.
But in order to make a comment and have it tied to yourself as an individual, you need to go ahead and submit a comment form or send in an email, and there's a email address there that you can do that.
Exactly.
And the other way folks will learn about upcoming meetings is we try to work our partner network. So we won't just be posting on the website. We'll have ads in the papers, ads on the radio. Our partners like Alaska Geographic or interested community organizations like the Copper River Watershed Project in Cordova will be trying to get stuff to those organizations to post on their Facebook site so we can really kind of cover all of our bases so people know what's coming. So definitely use our website, but just know we will be reaching out in other ways too.
Yeah, you'll be reaching. So people will see material about the Chugach National Forest on other websites.
Yeah.
On some of your partner. Let's talk about some of your partners.
Yeah.
The Children's Forest. Let's talk a little bit about that. Alaska Geographic.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that because we really haven't touched on that.
Yeah,
yet.
Absolutely. And just briefly, the connection to forest plan revision is one of the other aspects of the new rule in terms of encouraging greater public participation. Is it explicitly directs us to engage youth, and that's new for a forest plan rule. And for us, it was great because we already had a really solid foundation. For the past 5 years, we've been working with Alaska Geographic on this initiative called the Chugach Children's Forest. And really what that's about is it's engaging Alaska's diverse young people, educators, and communities in experiencing the Chugach National Forest and neighboring public lands, connecting them to the forest for their health, for just getting outside and having fun, connecting them for educational experiences and discovery, as Terry said, connecting them to potential internships and career opportunities, and connecting them to stewardship opportunities so they really learn about their role in conserving these places into the future and becoming the future stewards of these lands. So we've been working on that for about 5 years. In the past year, I think we had about 8,000 to 10,000 youth participate. And it's not just directly by Forest Service staff. It's a network of partners that we have developed together with Alaska Geographic, getting kids out across the entire landscape. And so we really had that foundation to build on when this new rule came out and said, you know, you want to engage youth. We're doing it already. And so we have a great network to already start engaging youth. And we have. We just kind of piloted our first youth engagement efforts in Cordova when we were over there for the public meeting.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm thinking when I was growing up, I mean, it was like typical that everybody went camping with their family. And, you know, I can remember going to Big Bear, and I can remember, you know, driving in, which is probably a park, not a national forest, I don't know. But I remember a black bear, I mean, black bears just walking up to the car, and they would have scratched noses, and people were giving them food. It was just all wrong. You know, it was so wrong. So I don't know how much wildlife management is part of Chugach National Forest. I know that, you know, sustaining those populations, making wildlife habitat, but do you do much management of the animals, or is that just Alaska Department of Fish and Game role?
Well, we do manage for the habitat, and we work very closely with other agencies such as the state and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the animals. But what we do provide, I think, is the interpretation, and we provide recreation sites that allow people to experience and view them in a manner that you know, encourages, as you said, certain behaviors and warnings and respect.
We've learned so much. Yeah. We've learned so much about, you know, what wildlife needs. And I just want to let folks, if they've just joined us, we're talking about the Chugach National Forest, which is a gem in our backyard here in Anchorage. And we have three wonderful guests. Sarah Borio is here with us, Don Reese, who's one of the planners, and Terry Marcerone, Terry, who is the supervisor of this forest. Terry, I'm just so intrigued by what it means to be the supervisor. It sounds like a really big job. What's it like? And was this your passion? Did you want to do this? Or, I mean, how did it come to be that this is your role?
Well, you already hit it. To be able to serve on a forest such as the Chugach with the kinds of resources it has, and remembering that we're managing a landscape, but really it's all about people. And so as a forest supervisor, who I really rely on is the staff that I have, and really trying to network and team that staff into, again, providing fantastic and quality experiences for the public. Mm-hmm. And for those that, again, can provide special uses or services that make that help visitors enjoy their landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I mean, from my perspective, it's all about location. We have 155 national forests across the country, and I think this one is a gem.
Oh, absolutely.
And so to be able to serve in this role as a forest supervisor is fabulous.
Did you begin as a ranger? Or, I mean, how did you become? I mean, you just don't apply to be the supervisor of the Chugach National Forest. So it must have been a process for you to acquire all the knowledge, all the experience that would take to do this job.
Well, Sarah hit it. I mean, you start off as a kid. I did the same thing you talked about. I did summer camps in the Angeles National Forest near Big Bear. But it's like the Chugach Children's Forest. You might start working at a local park, maybe move to a state park, and have a variety of experiences before you maybe work for Student Conservation Association or another program. And then you apply for a job as a temporary employee, as a biologist or a recreation tech. And that's what I did. You just work your way up, and eventually after 25 years, you know, you may have the opportunity to be a forest supervisor.
And the experience, really, that it takes.
Well, and both of you, I mean, Kathleen and Terry, both of what you're talking about, you guys had these experiences as young people. I'm sure it's the same for Don, and mm-hmm. it certainly was for me. I spent part of my childhood in the Tongass, and that definitely was one of the driving factors behind the Chugach Children's Forest, is recognizing that young people today don't necessarily have that direct experience or as frequently, because even in Alaska, we're urbanizing. We know Anchorage is just about half of our state population, and the demographics here have really changed. We have people from all over the world. There's 100 languages spoken in our school. And so the Children's Forest and our efforts to engage youth in this forest plan is really being deliberate about getting this new audience that maybe just doesn't have that same natural connection that mm-hmm. was so easy for us as young people, to get them involved with this process. Get them outside and have fun, but get them involved in really being a leader around these public lands.
Right. It's amazing to me. I mean, it was just a no-brainer that camping was a cheap family fun thing to do, and we did it every summer. And when I think about how Anchorage is changing and how many people from all around the world are moving here for opportunity, they may not think of the forest as the place where they go and play, you know? So that's really, really interesting. The other thing I think I read on the website was that part of the plan's goal, or the update's goal, is to be more responsive more quickly to change. And I think that's going to bring up the discussion of climate change. But we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back. So if you've got questions about what's happening in the Chugach National Forest based on climate change, we might have some good discussion when you come back. So this is Kathleen McCoy. You're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Thank you. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. This afternoon, we're talking about the Chugach National Forest, that beautiful gem where we spend most of our summers and some of our winters out in the Chugach National Forest. And that can be kayaking. I mean, it can be berry picking. It can be fishing, bird watching. I mean, so many of the things that we live in Alaska and love to do happens on the National Forest, and they are updating their forest plan. So we've invited a couple of their speakers to come to the show today to tell us about the plan, tell us about the forest. We have Sarah Borio here, who is both a public affairs person and also kind of partnership person.
Yes.
So we've been talking about the Children's Forest. We have Don Rees, who is one of their planners, working on this current update for the forest plan, and Terry Marceron, who is the supervisor for this forest. And it's a great time, really. They're just basically very interested in how you use the forest, what you think of access to the forest. Are there things that you think need to change in the way you can access the forest? And really, they're really here for you. So we'd invite you to just give them a call at 550-8433 or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I want to make sure people know how to participate. And Don, you mentioned that there are several offices around, in addition to the website, which is going to have a lot of information. You know, where are the places people can engage?
Well, I'm probably not the best person to answer that. I've been here about 6 months, and so Sarah or Terry, I'm going to defer to you as far as the district offices and our Visitor Information Center.
Well, we do have three district offices. We have one located in Cordova, we have one in Girdwood, and one in Seward. Our Seward office is also based, has a work center, a Kenai Lake Work Center, where a variety of our staff are housed. But those are our three geographic locations. We also have two visitor centers that many people visit, the Bagotch Bogs Visitor Center mm-hmm. out of Portage, and then the Valdez Visitor Center, which operates in the summer. So those are all locations where you access information and staff, as well as can gather information on our forest plan revision process.
I'm just going to go to the phones. We've got some emails and we've got some phone calls coming in. So I think this is a great opportunity. So I'd like to welcome Brent to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Brent.
Howdy do.
What's your question?
Well, I for 23 years, I've waited for an opportunity to beg, really, the Forest Service, please let us all promote more children in the forest. Fewer noisy machines. The helicopters, we don't need more helicopters. We don't need the snow machines in the winter and the four-wheelers tearing up the trails in the summer. We who enjoy Alaska on our own power can go nowhere else. We've got the planet's gem right here, and would ask the forest, sure speak for a few others, would really appreciate it if the Forest Service would weigh very heavily when they make their decisions to look ahead in the future, and let's keep the forest quiet and for the kids in the future.
Brent, how long have you been using the Chugach National Forest?
23 years, ever since I moved here from Colorado.
And do you think you've seen it change in that time period?
It's gotten a tad noisier, I think. It's been the most glorious part of my life since moving up here for these last 23 years. I just commune in the mountains as much as possible. The only thing I love more than the mountains are the kids. And I'm looking ahead at in the future. And I just would really wish that we didn't have to put up with the thumping racket from a helicopter, company trying to make money off of taking people into the forest at the expense of those of us, again, who enjoy the mountains on our own power, don't need machinery to recreate, and I want to see that preserved for children.
Well, Brent, I think you bring up a great point, and I'm guessing that the National Forest has heard this before, and it's tough because you don't respond to just one constituency. You have a number of constituencies.
I understand that.
I'm not answering the question, Brent. I'm kind of looking at our guests here, sort of wondering who might want to jump in and talk about that, because I don't think it's the first time they've heard it.
No, we are a multiple use agency, so we do provide a lot of different experiences. And as Brent indicated, motorized versus non. And that actually was a topic in the 2002 plan. In fact, in the Kenai area, we actually amended our plan in 2005-06 just to further define the areas for, as Brent indicated, sort of the solitude, the places where you could go and not hear the mechanized transportation like a helicopter or a snowmobile or an ATV.
But there are many folks too that
enjoy that experience as well, and that's sort of the multiple use. So what I value from Brent is acknowledging the fact that there is a value to the forest of having the solitude, and asking him as he provides his comments to us, or what are the areas that you want to see the solitude and see that maintained, or what's special there for you, and you know, what are the areas that, again, recognizing there could be motorized in other locations, where is the best place to have that motorized use?
I would say the open spaces away from Girdwood or other easily accessed, pedestrian accessed areas. So away from Seward, away from Whittier, away from Girdwood, and not have flight routes over those places and away from Clutna Lake. I saw a float plane land on Clutna Lake, for heaven's sakes. And the overriding thought I would encourage everyone to realize is that when we who enjoy Alaska on our own power, we don't infringe on the noise generating modes of recreation, the ATVs, the helicopters, etc. But when they recreate in our forest, they do infringe on the quiet.
I'm wondering whether there's some strategies that other national forests have used or that you are maybe already using. I'm thinking that Powerline Pass, you can't have snow machines on there certain days of the week, or maybe. And so I'm just wondering, or what are some of the strategies? I mean, identifying areas that you will try to guarantee are going to be solitude and quiet, allowing motorized vehicles in certain areas. But what about days of the week or times of the year? I mean, what are some of the strategies, even if you haven't implemented them yet, that you're aware of as Forest Service?
You hit on them. There can be alternating years of motorized, non-motorized, so users get it in various time periods. You can do seasonal restrictions that provide a certain time period that allows or doesn't allow. And then, you know, another area that, you know, as folks know, on the Chugach National Forest, the Nelly Wan College Fjord Wilderness Study Area, which is a study area designated by Congress. It isn't an official wilderness area yet because Congress still has to act. But that particular designation is a very protective designation that also determines whether or not any motorized use can go. In most wilderness areas, it's not authorized. Though, again, Congress can always determine where it may be allowed. So in places that, like that area, 2.1 million acres, we're managing it for that character and the characteristics that Brent is passionate about.
You know, we did have an email to that effect, someone asking for the Nelly Wan College Fjord Wilderness Study Area to become a fully wilderness designated area. And my question is, right at the moment, we have no wilderness areas in the Chugach National Forest.
I think that's correct. I read that
on the website. And the process, is it only Congress, or can it be a public process? How does it happen if people want that?
Well, Congress is the one who determines, signed by the president, that authorizes a wilderness area. Under the 1980 ANILCAs, when they determined the Nelly Wan College Fjord would be a wilderness study area. And the Forest Service role in that is to maintain its wilderness characteristics until Congress acts.
I see.
So we are maintaining that character so that it can be designated if Congress in the future acts. They can also
take it away,
and then we would manage it under non-wilderness type prescriptions. Mm. But as part of the forest plan revision, there is a requirement that we continually evaluate areas of land that are characteristic of wilderness. And as part of this process, we will do that, and then we look at making a recommendation. Remember, it's just a recommendation to Congress, and we manage it in the interim under prescriptions that have public input.
So it's very important to let the National Forest Service know which areas you really care about and would like to see designated that way. And they can make a recommendation, but it's essentially an act of Congress that would, yeah. But it's interesting, even when it's proposed, you manage it as a wilderness area, which is a tremendous benefit, so that the transition wouldn't be difficult into a full wilderness area. That's. I'm going to go to another caller. Hi, Bob. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I wanted to call in and thank the Forest Service for what they've done with the trails and the public use cabins. I've been using them, 15, 20 years.
That's great. Me too. I love them.
Yeah, and one of the things that really makes, we use Barber's Cabin every year. And one of the things that really makes Barber's Cabin nice is the wide trail, the handicap accessible trail. I'm getting older, as my wife is, and our grandkids are really enjoying and being able to take them in young. But what I ask is there opportunities to expand those kind of trails, maybe farther out along lower Russian Lake with additional cabins, or maybe a little lower, another lower easily accessible cabin on the Resurrection Trail going up towards Juneau and Salt Lake Cabin?
Well, those are all good suggestions, Bob. That's part of the process that we're looking for. And you're right, with the aging of America, we do need opportunities to consider accessibility. Have you had a chance? We just finished an accessible trail heading down from the Russian River campground down to the Russian River where everybody does fishing. That's we're very excited about that because that's providing some accessibility to thousands of individuals who like to fish and just walk along that portion of the river. I realize it's not a cabin, but it is one of our newest accessible trails.
How old is that one, Terry?
We just finished it. So it was last summer we were working on it. Have you had a chance, Bob, to travel?
No, I haven't. Usually when I fish the Russian, I stay in the camp. But during the spring, I'm usually one of the first who takes the family to climb over the snow chute to get to Barber's Cabin.
Right.
And so, but I see the quality of the trail above Barber's Cabin is so different than the trail into Barber's Cabin, and yet there's such lovely sights along the lower Russian Lake that could offer a little more expanded opportunity.
Well, thank you very much for that input.
Well, thank you, and I'll sign off.
You know, and I just wanted to... Thanks again, Bob, and I just wanted to take another opportunity to highlight another project that really is addressing that need, and that's working with the Alaska Railroad in our Whistle Stop Corridor, where we're working on develop these backcountry mini train stations on the Kenai Peninsula, and the first one at Spencer Glacier. The trail is accessible out to the viewing platform, so you have the access through the train, and you also have the accessible trail right out to this just incredible, glorious, you know, view of a glacier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just another example of the increasing importance of these issues.
Now, it raises a question in my mind. Can you start things that you see there's a need for? I mean, or do you have to wait, you know, do you have to get, I don't know, approval? Or can, as the supervisor, can you say the population's aging, we need to think about how much, can you be the master of your own forest?
Well, that's exactly what the forest plan's about, is it provides a strategic vision. What are the needs the next 15 years out? And again, where there's opportunities such as making more trails or facilities accessible, that's already a responsibility we have. But how we expand that is done through public comments, like Bob indicated.
Let's remind folks how they can comment. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to chop you off there. But they can go to the website right there. This is the if they just Google Chugach National Forest, you end up at the correct spot. And I think it's off to the right. I see a lot of things related to the new forest plan. I think there's a comment opportunity.
What you want to do is you want to go to the website and find forest plan revision, and there'll be a link there that you can link to lots of different information. And it just depends on where you come into the site. It may be on the left. It may be down in the bottom. But it's very clear, forest plan revision.
Yeah.
And we've deliberately put it in a couple of spots because we do have an interesting format for our website because there are a lot of things that we have to make sure are on there. But we've made sure it's in a few spots, so hopefully people can find it. And let us know if you're struggling.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've seen it in a couple of different places. I mean, like I said, the website is very rich with information. If you're curious and you're thinking of yourself as a stakeholder of Chugach National Forest, there is no shortage of information to background yourself. But you can also just tell them what you think. Tell them how you use the forest. It's that easy. So you don't have to be an expert to you just have to be a user, I guess, is what we'd say. Let's see. I just before we left, I was thinking about there was some directive in the update, I thought, to be flexible, effective, efficient in responding. I don't have the language right in front of me, Don, but maybe you can help me with this. I mean, it sounds like the Forest Service is thinking about change happening fast, needing to be responsive quickly. And that made me think about climate change. Now, we don't have a climate change expert here in the studio with us today, but I'm just asking you, is that part of the plan, recognizing that things are changing, the habitats may be changing, the opportunities for successful habitat may be changing. Is that part of why the responsiveness is sort of speeding up a little bit?
Absolutely. You know, the plan is to be revised every 15 years, but in the interim, in those 15 years, the plan can be amended based on the best available science. If there's something new that we're finding, it can be amended. And so that's a fairly easy process. With climate change, we are also looking at that, working with other agencies. One of the things that's stressed with the new planning rule is to collaborate with adjacent landowners. Climate change does not know a line in the sand.
Exactly.
It does not know a property boundary. So, we're looking to other agencies. They have expertise that we don't have, and we have expertise they might not have in trying to solve some of these larger landscape issues. Again, the three phases of this new planning rule is the assessment stage, which we're in right now, and then the second phase is the actual plan revision, and the third phase is monitoring. So it's really built to monitor the progress of what the decision is in changing the plan, whatever that is, and to monitor that and to adapt if we need to. So it's kind of a circular kind of planning effort where the monitoring provides feedback to the planners and the forest supervisor on, you know, how is the plan? Is it effective? What's working? What's not working? And so, that's the way the process is set up. And the three phases, it will be incorporating public comments and listening to the public and working with other agencies across boundaries and collaborating with others. And it's meant to be more effective and more efficient. And again, from a planning process that had taken anywhere from 5 to 7 years, the intent is to finish a plan in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I think I read that the 2012 plan was one in which some forest managers would see things they wanted to change, but the process was somewhat cumbersome, so they would wait till they actually had to change, whereas this seems like it's trying to make it possible to adapt as you go along if needed, that there's a difference between the 2012 and what you hope to get to. And I know, aren't we operating under the 22 plan?
we're operating under the 2002
Yeah.
plan that we have in place, and it's been amended a handful of times. We're trying to keep it up to date so that we're ready when we launch with this new plan, that things are ready to go. The process is meant so that it's easily amended and that it's adaptive through time, because it needs to be, I'd use the word nimble, in some cases where we need to adapt to different things, like possibly climate change.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference, though, between the strategic plan and on-the-ground actual implementation where a project is implemented. For instance, if there's erosion along a trail and the line officer, the district ranger, makes and has a team evaluate where to relocate a trail, that's project level. It's not at the forest plan level. So some of that that we're doing is educating folks on what is plan-related versus project-related.
Sort of the 30,000-foot level and then the on-the-ground level. I know looking at your website, I could see projects that are underway. You can see what the Forest Service is doing and find out, you know, what's happening. Or if you see some activity somewhere, you can probably find it on the website, what's going on there.
Right.
So that's the project level. That doesn't necessarily take a 15-year plan
Correct.
To implement. It can be basically at Terry's level where she can hear from her rangers that they need things and go ahead and implement them. Something else I saw on the site, which I think relates to this motorized and unmotorized, was I think the Resurrection Trail isn't open every year to snow machines. And this, I saw a note on your website that this is not the year for, this is one of the ways you try to manage it. So, you know, I guess I'm sort of seeing the Forest Service as this agency trying to, you know, steward and safeguard the forest. You also are the face that people turn to when they see something they don't like or they want something to change. But you also, you know, you can't just willy-nilly. You have to have your plan. It has to meet the plan. So is it difficult balancing some people's expectations for what should be able to happen? Or generally, I mean, you mentioned that when you first started your most recent series of assessment meetings, there was a little bit of, you're going to change something that I already like. And as they learned that this was actually an information gathering and we really want to hear it, then it sort of calmed down. You know, were you surprised by that? Or is that sort of typical experience because you're seen as, I don't know, a big management agency when they just don't want any interference with how they enjoy, you know, the outdoors? Is it a difficult relationship with the public?
I don't think so. I think a lot of is that we are servants to the public and the stewardship of the land, and we have to listen to both sides. And again, working with the public, you end up making better decisions in the end through that engagement. Mm-hmm. So again, for many, they may not always agree with the decision, but they accept it for hopefully what is a good purpose and a good rationale of a given project.
I know that collaboration and transparency is one of the goals of this process. So oftentimes I've been in that position where here's why we did what we did. And, you know, at least if you can explain it, people can see the logic of it, even if it didn't go their way. You know, it's when they don't get any answers that it can be kind of frustrating for them. So,
I would add that Dawn brought up a great point, which is I just want to add that the monitoring that you do and, you know, what was the purpose and did we meet the purpose? And if it didn't work, I mean, when we make decisions on a project level, I mean, they're not necessarily forever. I mean, Congress can make a forever decision, but we can't, and we don't intend to do that, and things change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think, again, the revision process is you're re-looking at your trends, your uses, what's important today is different than what it was 15 years ago. I mean, machinery changes, people's kind of activities. So that's kind of what's reflective, and
mm-hmm.
we're always going to adapt and change. And again, the plan, every project we do on the ground has to be consistent with our forest plan. And as you indicated, the plan still provides an overview of what is allowed in a given landscape, but it also provides some sideboards.
Yeah. I'm just going to give folks one more chance to call in. Our topic today is the Chugach National Forest. We've got some great experts with us, Sarah Borio, Terry Marcerone, the supervisor for this forest, and Don Reese, who's the team leader for the forest plan that's being updated right now. So don't hesitate to call us at 550-8433 if you've got a question. I wanted to raise, and again, I know you all are not scientists per se, and asking a bunch of science questions maybe is a bit off the mark here, but I know I saw reference to this on your website, the ecological balance, you know, what the forest offers, you know, when you have a civilized area, and it's almost like it's a giant filter for everything that we do. The water gets cleaned in the watersheds, the trees take care of the carbon, all those things that happen. And I'm just wondering, I don't know where science falls in this, whether, for example, if you have questions, Terry, or concerns, where do you go to get your science done? Do you have scientists working for the Forest Service, or do you employ another agency, or how do you get the science that you need?
Actually, we do have a branch of the Forest Service that is dedicated to research. And so we do have scientists that actually have done long-term studies on a variety of resource aspects on the Chugach National Forest. But in addition, we also have relationships and partnerships with the University of Alaska Anchorage, Alaska APU. So we actually have a variety of researchers that come forward, and quite often even one of the Forest Service researchers may invite, you know, four or five, you know, universities from across the country to do work. Copper River Delta is an excellent example where we've got, you know, 15 to 20 different researchers all doing various aspects of work on salmon and temperature change and invertebrates that feed salmon. There's all kinds of research going on.
I'm going to jump to the phones just because we don't have all that much time, and I want to make sure people get their questions answered. Hi, Ben. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. So I had a quick question just as a trail user. It's out. What kind of information do we take pictures? What can we give you if we're out in the, on a trail?
That's a great question, Ben. What we would tell you is if you're out on a trail and you see something of a concern, a tree that's crossing the trail, people are starting to go around it, or you see some erosion or a culvert that looks like it's starting to wash out, again, you can go to any one of our offices and note the name of the trail. You can send us a picture of it, what your concern is, maintenance-wise. And the sooner you can get that to us, that helps us adjust where our trail crews and where our staff go to potentially repair that as quick as we can.
You can tweet it to us, too.
Oh, yep.
What's your tweet?
Chugach Forest AK. Our handle? What's our handle?
Yeah, there you go. Your handle. Chugach Forest AK. And I found a Facebook page, but it didn't seem like it was yours.
We are not authorized for Facebook at this time.
Okay,
but
so
we
if you
are
find
hopeful,
one.
And we always work with our partners. So, as I mentioned earlier, we have a really great network of partners who do have Facebook, like Alaska Geographic and others. So you can always reach us through our friends as well. But we are on, our social media access is on Twitter right now. And you can upload photos a variety of different ways there. So, yeah.
So, Ben, does that sound like you feel like you know what to do?
Excellent. Thank you.
You can do it instantaneously on your mobile from, you know, yeah. Twitter. That's what's great about it.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Ben. Let's see. I wanted to talk about science. We talked a little bit about that. We've got about 3 minutes, and I probably won't take any more calls just because we're going to – I hate to chop people off. But I generally ask, you know, my guests, what is it that you want to leave with your listeners today? And it's kind of your last word, and I it has to be sort of short, but we do have 3 minutes. It's not too short. So what do you want people to think about as they leave this show?
Well, I'll start by asking, people here to really engage in their revision process. I mean, this is your national forest. Whether it's for you or your future generations, your kids, I mean, this is the chance to help influence the next 15 years of how we manage the forest. If we're doing it well now and you agree with a lot of how we're doing it, let us know that. If you see some opportunities for change, let us know what those trends are that you want us to consider. Anything site-specific is very, very helpful, but I just want people to engage and recognize that this is a different process, that we are listening. I'm engaging in these meetings, which is important for me as the forest supervisor, and I get more out of hearing from people and their feedback than I do from anything else in my position.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Don and Sarah. No last words from you, but thank you.
She's the boss.
She's the boss. Thanks so much for everybody, for Sarah, for joining us, Terry, and also Don and the callers who listened and called. Our host, Shelley Wade, will return for next week's edition of Hometown Alaska. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.